Without further ado, I'm going to introduce our moderator for tonight's debate, Wave 3 TV's Scott Reynolds. Scott?
We are going to try to keep this moving along. Two great things tonight. The turnout, fantastic. Thank you, everybody, for showing up here. We love to see the interest of young people. And also good air conditioning. We got to give thanks for that. It is very comfortable in here on a tough night, so we're glad to have it. I'm going to give you an introduction of the candidates here that we have tonight, the panelists, everybody, and then a little bit about the format. Tonight we have with us David Haupt, editor emeritus from the Courier Journal, John David Dyke, attorney, Courier Journal columnist, who's in there quite a bit, and we have representatives of the Governor's Scholars Program here. It's Elizabeth Crush, Shayla Elmore, Anthony Flaherty, Ross Michikay, and Trey Taylor. All right, and they'll be asking questions as well. We have our candidates over there. We have Greg Fisher, the Democrat, Jackie Green, the Independent, and Hal Heiner, the Republican candidate for Louisville Metro Mayor here. And tonight we're going to start out with six total questions and timed responses. They'll have 90 seconds to respond to these questions that we're going to try to keep to 30 seconds or less. And the first question will go in a drawing. Greg Fisher will be in the number one slot. And in his 90-second response, if he does reference any of the other candidates by name or party or that candidate from that party, if we know it's a direct reference, they will have 30 to rebut. But they'll also get the full 90 seconds to answer that specific question from the scholars or our two other panelists here tonight. And we'll go right down the line, and then we'll go back through again till we get to the cross-questioning segment. And that will allow the candidates to ask questions of each other, and each candidate will have a chance to ask a couple of questions, and there'll be a two-minute response there as well, and a chance for a rebuttal again if someone is mentioned in that answer, if there's an accusation made or some type of mention of that candidate. And then we will go to the closing statements, and we'll start on the other end with that. So that will be Hal Heiner tonight. So let's get our candidates up here and get ready to go. All right, scholars, you're first out of the gate, and your first question will go to the Democrat, Greg Fisher.
My name is Elizabeth Crush, and I'm from Ballard High School here in Louisville.
And my name is Anthony Flaherty. I'm from St. Xavier High School in Louisville. And Mr. Fisher, as a potential mayor of this city, please tell us about the most significant issue on which you have changed your mind or made a mistake.
And how would you respond differently if facing this issue again?
Is this the most significant issue in my life?
Preferably in the political realm, sir.
Okay, well, I'm somewhat new to the political realm. I'm an outsider, so I'm going to go with my life. How about that? Early in my career, I felt like when you're a leader or a manager, you know, you make the plans, you tell people what to do, and then the organization runs smoothly. It didn't take me long to understand that the power of an organization is the team of people that you have. And if you're able to build that team with a lot of different skills, a lot of different behaviors, and you're focused on what your plans are, you can build a world-class team. So as we take a look at what we're trying to do as a city, the same thing applies. The mayor is the leader, the manager of the city, having the ability to pull together a diverse group of people that are talented to move Louisville to the next level has that degree of importance to it as well. So I'm committed to pulling a very diverse team together, a team with skills, people that have the highest integrity and want Louisville to be seen as one of the great cities in the world.
All right, and let's move now to candidate number two. Mr. Green, your thoughts about a mistake that you may have made and how you would respond differently if facing that issue again.
Scott, thanks. Thank you. In the late 80s, I bought a 300-acre farm in southern Indiana, and I built a 7,000-square-foot lodge on that farm, overlooking a beautiful lake. In the early 90s, I had opportunity to do a lot of reading regarding social issues and environmental issues. And I came to the conclusion that my life had to change. my lifestyle of living out on this farm, an hour away from Louisville, was unsustainable. That was a major mistake, building that. That has impacted my political persuasion, and it's an issue I think that we all need to be dealing with on a variety of different levels. 14 seconds. I fly less, I drive less, I eat lighter, I live in a one-bathroom house. My lifestyle has changed. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Heiner, any mistake that you'd like to point out and how you might respond differently to a situation?
You know, when I got excited when merger passed in our community, I thought, wow, this is a chance for this government to actually have one vision and for us to go someplace. I'd never been in office before, and my feeling was that, you know, it's the government passion to actually jump in there and make change and move the community forward. Well, I soon found out in that first year in office, that's really not how it works. That it's the passion of people in the community, that it takes that level of passion to actually get anything done. So government is full of all sorts of good intentions. You know, here's 100 things we want to work on. But quite frankly, if there are not people in the community that step up on task forces, that help solve the problem, that issue goes nowhere. So after that first year, finally in the second and third year, I finally started to realize that without involvement of the people in the community in a big way, if that passion didn't come in, it just would never move forward. So as I approach projects if it doesn't have public involvement, it just sits until the people are ready to say, let's go and jump in and actually make it happen.
All right. And now our second question tonight from Mr. David Hopp, and that will be directed first at Candidate Green tonight. David?
Mr. Green, one way for you to tell help voters understand what kind of mayor you would be for you to tell them what kind of mayor you think Jerry Abramson has been. That's a style and a set of goals and an approach to things that they know very well by now. So my question to you is, how would you do things differently than Mayor Abramson, and what would you do differently?
Thank you, David. I am not running against Jerry. Jerry has done a great job in many different areas of our city life. One of the areas I think that I would differ significantly from Jerry's approach, and this has to do with policy, would be to resist the destruction of farms in an unsustainable development pattern. That development pattern takes away from existing neighborhoods. It takes away infrastructure, public infrastructure. It takes away private investment, and it takes away metro services. That's a major difference. I would also differ in my approach to transportation. My approach to transportation would give much greater emphasis to public transit as a higher priority than building one or two Ohio River bridges. I would also differ from Jerry in that I would be focusing on our economy in building an energy independent, an energy stingy economy rather than a greedy energy consumptive economy.
Mr. Heiner, your thoughts on the tenure and the effectiveness of Mayor Abramson and where you might differ?
Well, certainly Mayor Abramson is to be respected for his over 25 years of public service. And there's been many accomplishments. One wonderful accomplishment has been taking our two governments, city and county, and putting them together in one government in a relatively seamless fashion. And there's also been some major project advances during his career. A couple areas that need significant change. First is in job attraction. We have had the highest unemployment every year for the past 10 years, good years and bad. And the focus by the chief executive, by the mayor, on job attraction, being directly involved as a chief economic development official, that priority needs to be up. We need a mayor that's involved every week going through the prospect list, trying to make sure Louisville can close the deal for new jobs and keep the businesses that we have here today. Certainly from a financial book standpoint, if you follow the 63 audit deficiencies we had last year, qualified opinion by the auditors, we need a whole different set of books. And not only books that are easy to understand, but that are available on the internet so that everybody can see. Because who owns this government? The citizens own it. And they have the right to see everything. Debt schedules, spending, revenues, it all needs to be online, and we need to be a national model. And third, on the deals that have been done with out-of-town developers, details matter. And the proper amount of attention hasn't been given, and the taxpayers have not been protected in a few very significant deals in the past few years.
Mr. Fisher, your response about the mayor's tenure and your thoughts on how you might be different or similar.
Well, people often ask us this question. I think they expect us to be critical of Mayor Abramson. This man has given 25 years of his life to the community. So anybody that's been there that long, we're not going to agree with everything that he's done, but I think primarily we need to say thank you for that. Whether it be the merger, the airport, Waterfront Park, there's a lot of good things to build on. So let's look to the future. I'd like to be seen, and this is what I hear time and time again as I'm around the community, to be seen as a great mayor, not just for the city, but the suburbs also. You know, this is the first mayor after Jerry, so you have an opportunity for one city, one county. You know, why can't we green throughways like Preston Highway, Dixie Highway? Why can't they have the originality of a Bardstown Road or a Frankfort Avenue so we can bring our place alive? Because that's what people tell me they love about Louisville, our restaurants that are native to here, our parks, our businesses. Let's spread that throughout the community and be a mayor that invests throughout the suburbs as well as the city. And last would be, I would like for Louisville to be known as one of the great entrepreneurial cities in the world. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a job creator. That's what I've done my whole life. We should use our size here in Louisville as an advantage. We need to be fast with our decision-making. We need to be nimble. We need to be focused on businesses that want to come here so we're a place that's easy to do business with. So be a mayor for the entire city and suburbs, and be the entrepreneurial city.
Guys are doing a great job of staying on time, by the way. Thank you for that. John David Dyke, your question, and it will go first to candidate Heiner tonight.
The unemployment rate in Louisville is about 10%. An administration representative told the Metro Council just yesterday that teenage unemployment is at a post-war high. Black unemployment is at least half again as high as the unemployment rate generally. Yet, as almost anyone who has gotten a new roof in Louisville recently can attest, there's an abundance of immigrants working here. My question is threefold, each part of which is extremely well suited to a direct answer. Is immigration, legal and illegal, having a harmful impact on employment, and especially employment of teens and African Americans in Louisville? Does Louisville have an illegal immigration problem? And would you support an ordinance along the lines of the Arizona statute that would allow Metro Police to seek verification of a person's immigration status during other lawful contact with that person?
Okay. Thank you for that question on immigration. Louisville, not only our problem is not an unemployment problem resulting from immigration. Our unemployment problem results from a lack of priority in job attraction, expansion, and retention. So first, we need to be able to grow jobs in Louisville. We have been losing jobs every year for 10 years. We need to turn that around. Second, more specifically, on the do I feel like we have an illegal immigration problem? That certainly hasn't been a topic of discussion in this community. I don't think it's a highlight in Louisville, Kentucky. There are laws that if someone is arrested for illegal activity, there is a check on whether they are here legally or illegally. I would support enforcement of the existing laws, but I wouldn't support new laws in Louisville, Kentucky. I just do not see that as a pressing issue. What the pressing issue is in Louisville, Kentucky, is that we need to grow jobs in this community and stop going backwards in good times and in bad.
All right. And Mr. Fisher, your thoughts about immigration, legal, illegal, the impact on the community, the Arizona law, what might be right or not right for Louisville.
The key, obviously, is to grow the pie so that there's more jobs available to everybody. And we have some very unique strengths in Louisville to do that. Like a company, we want to take a look at what our competitive advantage is, and that's how we can grow our jobs. Number one, we have more companies headquartered here in Louisville in the aging care or senior care business than any other city in the world. Boston is second to us. So this is an industry that can create tens of thousands of jobs. We also have an opportunity to create green jobs around our 100-mile bike loop and 21st century parks. So there's lots of ways that we can grow our city with the jobs, so there's jobs for everybody. Internationals are an extraordinarily important part of any city. When you go to a vibrant, growing city, you will see them embrace internationals and the jobs that they bring and they create, the innovation and the risk-taking that they represent. And I know I don't need to remind everybody that we were all immigrants at one point in time as well. The police certainly have not reported that we have any type of immigration or illegal immigration problem here in Louisville, so I don't see that as an issue for the city right now. The Arizona decision is fragmenting the country right now. It's producing all types of side effects. I was in California and Utah a few weeks ago. They are now, as immigrants, illegals leave Arizona. They're coming into those states. We need a federal approach with this, not a local approach. That would be a problem. So internationals are part of the growth of my Louisville strategy.
Mr. Green, your response to the multi-pronged immigration question.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. David. John David. I'm grateful to see that all three of us are united in opposing an Arizona-style legal response to immigration. I spent six years from the year age of 12 to 18, very formative years, 12 to 18 years of age, 6 years, in São Paulo, Brazil. Back then, that was a long time ago, 65 to 71, that city had 7 million people in it, crushing poverty. If I were under the thumb of that kind of poverty, I would move, I would go, I would cross any river to provide food for my family, to give them the life-supporting elements that they require. I do not condemn immigrants who get here any way they can if they're under that kind of pressure. We need to be a community that welcomes, a community that extends compassion. Thank you.
All right. Now to our second round of questioning, beginning with the scholars and starting one candidate down from where you did last time. So this will begin with Mr. Green.
Hello, candidates. I'm Trey Taylor from Russell County, Kentucky.
And my name is Shayla Elmore, and I'm from Mufferville, Kentucky, which is located in Hart County. Given the nature of Louisville's relationship with the rest of the Commonwealth, how will you serve as an ambassador for Louisville from Louisville Metro to Kentucky's 119 other counties?
And what strategies will you implement for establishing and or stewarding partnerships throughout the state?
Thank you, Trey and Shayla. I think Louisville has a great opportunity today, at this point in history, to reach out to the other counties. We were, once upon a time, connected by passenger rail. We today are not. Today we rely on a transportation system that, again, is very energy greedy. That energy is no longer going to be available to us. The volume of the quantity and cost of that energy are going to escape, are going to change in a direction we'd not like to see. Louisville needs to step up and start making contact with our sister cities, our sister counties, in reestablishing a transportation system based in larger part on passenger rail. We can grow that system, make strides, improve ridership in there, and then link also to the major cities in the larger region – by high-speed rail. That is an area that Louisville must take a leadership role in, and I'm committed to that. Thank you.
Mr. Heiner, your thoughts about Louisville's connection to the other counties and the stewardship you might be in favor of?
Actually, I saw a professor at U of L drew a picture of Kentucky, how Louisville is viewed in our state, and showed sort of the state of Kentucky centered around Lexington, and then showed an ocean on the west side of Kentucky, and out here was sort of Louisville as an island. So I very much appreciate your question. What I'm proposing is a different relationship, actually forming a relationship between Louisville, executive branch in Louisville, and the leaders in cities throughout Kentucky. We have a lot of common urban problems with Northern Kentucky, Lexington, Elizabethtown, Bowling Green, Paducah, Ashland, that I think joining together we can solve those urban problems and then go together to Frankfort to try to solve those problems, a new focus on problems that are distinctively city problems. That hasn't happened yet. About halfway through my time on the council, we started to build a coalition with county judge executives in Northern Kentucky. And I know they are hungry for that relationship to try to work on common problems. We're working on transportation problems. So that's what I look forward to as mayor, working with mayors throughout cities in Kentucky to solve common problems in Frankfort.
All right, and Mr. Fisher, your thoughts about the relationship of Louisville to the rest of the counties in the state?
Well, we want to start by Louisville being a model for excellence. I don't know about you all, but I'm tired that every time I see some type of quality of life metric, Kentucky is somewhere usually between 35th and 48th. We can do better than that. We have some of the brightest minds in this very room right now with the Governor Scholars. They can compete with anybody in the world. And it's that type of mindset that we need to adopt, not only here in Louisville, but throughout Kentucky as well. Now, part of that is that we need to become a state that I call a both-and state, not either-or. Frequently, people give you these false choices. Either Louisville wins or the state wins. Well, when you go to companies that are winning, when you go to cities, states that are winning, they're both-and. Both Louisville can win and the state can win. When Louisville grows, the state wins. Now, in the 2000 census, for the first time, there are more people that live in cities, the urban areas in Kentucky, than in rural areas. And that's going to do nothing but accelerate, because jobs happen in urban areas. So the focus on jobs is one area. Second, the more collaboration between U of L and UK, the better, in health, in energy, in the jobs that those create. And interestingly, 2 years ago at the University of Louisville, there's now more people attending U of L from out of the state than inside the state. So it's being an ambassador of goodwill to say, let's win in Louisville, let's win in the state. They're mutually compatible.
Right. Mr. Hoppe, your question beginning with Candidate Heiner.
Mr. Heiner, the mayor, of course, doesn't, in our form of government, doesn't control the Jefferson County public school system. But obviously, the school system believes, and I suspect you believe too, that the mayor ought to be the most visible supporter, partner, booster of the public school system. So I ask you a couple of things about the public schools. First of all, in your personal life, have you supported the public school system in Jefferson County? Secondly, do you think the money now spent on busing for diversity would be better spent on improving neighborhood schools? And third, what do you think the impact would be on Louisville in terms of economic development and social needs and housing and other issues if Louisville did give up on school choice and busing for diversity and go back to neighborhood schools?
Thank you. Thank you for that question on the school system. And I'll tell you that as out campaigning at fairs and festivals and door-to-door, people will say, tell me what you're going to do for education. And I say, well, you know, the mayor has no formal authority. They have their own school, elected school board, their own budget. And they say, oh, we understand that, but what are you going to do for education? Thank you for that question. And the mayor certainly has the ability to pull people together to solve problems. First, on personal support, I'm a graduate of the public school system here in Louisville, Atherton High School, and University of Louisville as well. I understand the importance of 100,000 students here in Jefferson County being educated in the public schools, and I have to tell you, the scores of many schools in this community will absolutely take your breath away. we are in trouble. In fact, our GED rates are falling. I hope to first reverse the GED rates so we have more people receiving their GEDs. Second, I plan to bring in colleges into the school so that people can actually complete courses, and we're starting to do that, but we need to do it in a way that people are focused on education beyond high school and not making that decision in their senior year. Concerning diversity, I support the diversity goals of the schools. I do think an hour and a half each way on a bus for a first grader is not right. And we need to find a better way. We need to find a better way to accomplish that. The school board, in fact, agreed with me on that, and I know they worked this year to try to reduce it. And hopefully, they'll continue those efforts.
Mr. Fisher, your thoughts about the county schools here in Jefferson County and the way students are moved from their neighborhoods,
and specifically neighborhood schools, and whether we should abandon that effort?
Yeah, should we go to neighborhood schools or stick with the busing that we have now?
Very good. Clearly, the mayor should be the conscience for the community in terms of the educational outcomes. The fact of the matter is today, our students, when they graduate, will be competing with other students from Shanghai and Bangalore, not just Chicago and Charlotte. So it's a global economy. So insisting that our education is on par with the best in the world has got to be an imperative for the mayor. In terms of my personal support, I've done several things over the years. One of my companies, Dan Clayton Corporation, we've adopted Gutter Muth Elementary. We participate in the Everyone Reads program with them. I brought 25 international musicians to town 2 years ago in a program called Roads to You that was headquartered out of Male High School. We used music and cross-cultural experience to bring teenagers together so they could have interfaith and cross-cultural discussions and understand that we're all one world. And then last, right now, I'm working on a program to put a nurse in every Jefferson County public schools. There's only 16 nurses for the 150 schools. The student assignment plan is a critical part of preparing our students to compete and be ready for a diverse global economy. I'm concerned about the transportation times that some of our kids have. That's a problem. But when we take a look at the benefit of diversity and being prepared for an international future, that's important. Neighborhood schools obviously would be the best way to go. But the facts are that we have a very segregated housing for the most part in our community. Over time, we need to work on that so we can become better in that area.
All right. And Mr. Green, your thoughts about the JCPS system and its methods right now of how they place kids.
Thank you. Will I be a supporter and partner with JCPS? Yes, definitely. Do I support the transportation student assignment plan? I do not. I think there's a more organic way to achieve economic integration. That's what we're after, economic integration. And this way is much more, it has greater integrity than shipping kids around from neighborhood to neighborhood. We need to make affordable housing available throughout the county, evenly distributed. That way, every area is a diverse area. Every school will be a diverse school. Quotas will be met. No child will need to be bused. The current system is onerous for those students who are traveling 2 hours a day. The parent cannot be involved in the education of a child across town. The child cannot participate in after-school programs. I know how important those were in my education. The neighborhood is not going to be invested in the school. The school is not going to be invested in the neighborhood. We're losing too much there. Segregated housing. Yeah, I think I touched upon that.
Well, that's time. Hit there.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. And John David Dyke, your question now, and I believe you're going to be starting with Mr. Fisher.
The Wall Street Journal reported on Monday that, quote, after years of whittling staff and cutting back on services, towns and cities are now outsourcing some of the most basic functions of local government, from policing to trash collection. The move saves cities budget-crushing costs of employee benefits like health insurance and retirement. When you were running for the U.S. Senate 2 years ago, you told the AFL-CIO that you opposed efforts to privatize public services. My question, again, threefold, each part of which is extremely well suited to a direct answer, is that still your position? is there any service Metro government now provides that you would even consider privatizing? Or would you refuse to privatize a service even if the facts and the evidence were overwhelming that the service could be provided better, cheaper, and faster by a private vendor than by government?
Thank you. Normally when people say we need to outsource, the first question I ask them is, have you involved your employees in problem solving? The answer is almost always no. Have you involved your employees in improvement exercises? The answer is always no. To me, you start with leadership and management and make sure that they're doing the proper job of leading their organization with the proper values, the proper culture, the proper training, the proper alignment on the goals. Now, frequently, when that happens, those folks that have been doing the job, as long as they want to be there, can do it better than anybody in the world. And so I start with that, by making sure that the people that are already employees of the city have every possible way that they can succeed. That's step number one before you ever even talk about outsourcing. So that's my philosophical position on that. I've been able to turn around workforces that have not been productive into being the best in the world through that approach. So I'm not one just to throw out people and give up on them because they've had poor management or poor leadership. In terms of categorically saying I would never do that, I would not say that either. And what I've communicated to the labor community is that as long as they embrace best practices, being the best in the world in safety, productivity, and quality, I'll be their partner. But if that's not their goal, the people of our city deserve better.
All right. Mr. Green?
John David, I too am not a fan of outsourcing and privatizing our city services. We can do a better job. There's always room for improvement within any organization. I know there's definitely room for improvement within Metro's organizations. Which ones, of course, I'm not a fan. I wouldn't look at outsourcing or privatizing any of them. There would have to be some very significant reason put on the table for me to consider that. Thank you.
And Mr. Heiner?
No, I've worked at the council to try to get the administration, either by ordinance or convincing them to change the way that costs of services have been delivered to the council, because right now it's almost like a shell game. It's impossible to understand, for instance, what it costs to pick up trash at one house for a year. We've been asking for that number for years, never get it. What we need to do in this new government is set up like the best-run businesses and the best-run governments, that in the books for the city, when the budget is presented, we can see how many times a particular service was provided, what the cost was for that service, and how that compares to best practice, whether it's in best practice in other cities or in the private sector. And from that, we can decide how we can focus on finding efficiencies in this government. On core services, certainly public safety and other core services of government, I do not support privatization. A lot of times you'll come in with a loss leader number, and then all of a sudden the profit motive kicks in, and then sort of who has who at that point. For services that are non-core services, if the evidence is overwhelming, you just can't get, there's just no way to get there, then I think the city would need to take a look at those services. But generally, when other cities have looked at privatization, keeping the services in-house where there's no profit being paid to an outside company, just about each time has turned out to be the least cost way to deliver that service.
All right. We have one more question from our scholars tonight, and they are going to be starting with Candidate Green for the first response. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Green. My name is Ross Michke from Trinity High School here in Louisville. One thing I've noticed, especially here at GSP, is that a person's faith is sometimes more than just a practice, it's a way of life. So my question is, how will your faith influence your actions as mayor? And if it will not, why not? And also, are you willing to veer from your personal belief systems if the needs and beliefs of your community call you to do so?
Ross, the question pertains to faith. How does faith inform?
Yes.
And would I veer from that? Faith does inform. Faith makes us, it gives us our humanity. It grounds us. It defines who we are. Values are important. My position relative to destroying farms for unsustainable development and insisting that those investment funds, those public infrastructure dollars, and those metro services go to existing neighborhoods was recently called to question. And I was accused of trying to tell people where to live. And I said, no, I'm not trying to tell people where to live. I just don't want to make it possible for them to live in the wrong places. The response was, that's a value judgment. We are called to operate out of a value system, to turn our back on our values and on our faith is wrong.
All right, Mr. Heiner, your thoughts about your faith influencing your actions as mayor, and would you veer from those beliefs if need be for the community?
I think faith is important, certainly in the founding of our country, when you read the opening to the Declaration of Independence, and it talks about, which was a radical thought back in the 18th century, that all men are created equal, that they have certain unalienable rights, like right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I think many of those writers, their faith helped inform them to write what became the foundation for our company. I think it's also a foundation for how many in our community live their life. Certainly if you look at Louisville as a city of nonprofits, a strong faith community, strong civic and nonprofit community doing a lot for others, the people in those organizations have figured out that the best life is a life of purpose, and the highest purpose is helping others. So to the extent that that faith informs individuals in our community when they go about setting up a medical clinic in an underserved area or build community gardens in another area that's desperate for fresh produce, I wholeheartedly support those efforts.
All right, Mr. Fisher.
I appreciate the question from a good Trinity High School guy. That's where I graduated from. Thank you. My faith, like most of ours, was informed by our parents. My mom's main message to us was, if you can help somebody, you help them. Don't ask what's in it for you, just help them. My dad's main belief was, everybody's the same, whether it's the President of the United States or somebody hard on their luck on the streets. So I grew up with my four siblings, were five of us, in that type of environment. My most satisfying moments as a professional have been when I've been able to pull together teams of people in the workplace and watch as we give them the training and see their potential as human beings come alive. Sometimes potential that they didn't know that they had, because somewhere along the line they lost the joy of learning that we all had together. That's an amazing gift to be able to do that. And I see that opportunity as your next mayor as well, not only with the 7,500 employees of Louisville Metro, but also our citizens, because I believe everybody has unlimited potential when high expectations are set and people help them along the way. I've been very active in the community and the interfaith world as well. While I have my own beliefs, I believe that we all need to live together, whether we're Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, in a peaceful manner. It's a global world right now. It's essential that that's an important part of all of us as citizens.
All right. Thank you, candidates, and thank you for all your great questions from the panelists here tonight. My favorite part of the debate format here tonight, though, is the little crossfire that we're going to get into right now, where they get to question each other, and I think you'll enjoy this as well. And we're going to start out this second part of our format with Mr. Green. You have a question for one of the candidates, and they are going to have 2 minutes to respond.
Which question is
that? Yeah, and which candidate? It's all up to you.
Hal.
Greetings.
How do your land development, economic, energy, and transportation policies differ from those of Greg.
Okay. How do my economic policies differ than those of Greg? Well, certainly my experience for the last 20 years has been directly in the field of job attraction, working with companies from around the world, East Coast, West Coast, on understanding how they make a decision to come to Louisville. So from a job standpoint, my experience has been direct on the point of job attraction. From a land use standpoint, I served starting 20 years ago on 12 people that ended up being 12 people writing the goals and objectives for our community from a community planning standpoint. So I've been involved for those 20 years in determining, as a community, how should we plan, how should we grow, and proud of that, and proud of that service.
All right. And I guess we go now. I didn't see a direct reference there, so I think you were just trying to contrast, and you stated your position, Al. So we're going to go to you for the next question now of either candidate that you'd like to pose it to.
Okay. Greg, during the last election cycle, you ran for the United States Senate, a deliberative legislative position that focuses on federal and international policy issues. Now you are running for mayor, an executive position that is responsible for making thousands of important decisions impacting the future and functioning of a large city. Those two elected positions couldn't be more different. If your passion was to make Louisville better and your ambition was to be mayor and manage our city, why run for the U.S. Senate in the first place? Or is running for mayor your second choice?
I appreciate the compliment, Hal. It's nice being with you tonight. I think the common denominator there is a desire for public service. As a business person and as somebody that's had some good fortune through hard work, you can make a difference individually by endowing scholarships at Trinity High School or the University of Louisville. But when you take a look at where the real benefit, the leveraged benefit, can take place, it is through government service, through public service, whether it be in the United States Senate or as mayor. Running for the U.S. Senate taught me that I enjoyed this. I like people. I like solving problems. I like bringing people together so that they can realize their potential, as I mentioned earlier. So I said I would try that, and I liked it. And then Jerry Abramson was coming to a decision point. He decided not to run for mayor. This is my hometown. My wife Alex and I have raised our four kids here. I love Louisville. Throughout my business career, I've been a chief executive. I've built nationally award-winning companies. So I know a lot about leadership. I know a lot about managing. And I felt simply like I could help my city. So it was with that spirit that I took that on. And you know, Hal, that it's much easier not to run for office and stay home and be a critic on the couch. So for anybody that runs for office, my first reaction, whether I agree with them or not, is to thank them for trying.
All right. And the third question will come from you, Mr. Fisher, to the candidate of your choice.
Hal, I was going to be nice to you tonight until you asked me that question, so I'm coming back at you. One of the things that I pride myself on is that I'm a coalition builder. I have a lot of support in the community, whether it be the East, the West, or the South. So to me, it's important that the center is represented, because I think Louisville is a compassionate city that is a centrist organization. I'm concerned about whether or not you represent that center, Hal. And case in point, you appeared at a Tea Party rally alongside Rand Paul. So my question to you, and as our friend John David would say, it's a very simple monosyllabic response. Are you supportive of Rand Paul, number one, and do you believe his beliefs and policies are good for our city?
Thank you, Greg. you know, I'm running for mayor of Louisville. I am not running for anybody else's campaign, on anybody else's platform, for what they stand for or don't stand for. And quite frankly, an analysis of various candidates at any level or any party on their positives and negatives of their backgrounds, quite frankly, is inappropriate in a mayor's race. What I am running is, I am running as a fiscal conservative. I'm running as a person that for the past 8 years has served on this Metro Council in the trenches as this new merged government has come together. Somebody that for the past 20 years, either civically or on this government, I have served over and over and over because I care about this community. And experience matters. So, direct answer, my focus is on my campaign for mayor, my vision for where this community can go, and talking about candidates in other races actually is irrelevant to this race and, quite frankly, a waste of time.
Okay. See, I knew we'd like this segment. Let's go to question number two now from each of the candidates. So we're going right back to Mr. Green and direct it to who you wish.
Being the only even-handed person here tonight, Greg, how do your land development, four-part question, how do your land development, economic energy, and transportation policies differ from Howell's?
Relative to land development, I think we have a wonderful opportunity here in Louisville, as I've mentioned, with this 100-mile bike loop that we have to demonstrate to the world how a progressive city defines its urban edge in the 21st century. And I see that edge, Jackie, as a balance between the development and the environment. So I think that there's a new way of living, and we can model that along our urban edge. Relative to economic differences, I've been growing jobs my whole career. That's what I do. I'm an entrepreneur. I wake up thinking about that. I go to sleep thinking about that. I'm more of a business builder, I would say. Hal's a developer. I'm a business builder. I'm a job creator. Those would be some of the differences that come to mind.
All right. Mr. Heiner, your question?
Thank you. Mr. Fisher, over the course of this campaign, you have made no secret that a Fisher administration would be a continuation of the current government. From hiring the mayor's spokesperson to write your policy, to interviewing every department head and promising jobs. Can you tell us one instance in the 8 years of this Metro government where you have stood up and publicly disagreed with the current administration?
Okay. So you need to check your facts, Hal. I interviewed the managers of each of the departments because if you're going to lead something, you need to understand what the departments do. You need to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the departments. It gives you a real good perspective on what the culture is of the current administration. So if you're buying a company, you go inside of it and do due diligence. In effect, as mayor, you're the chief executive, so you want to understand what's going on. That's the purpose of that effort. The only person I've talked to about a job is Police Chief White. Again, to put it in the business analogy, if I'm going to buy a business and I take possession of it on January the 1st, and one of the star players that's beloved by the community and has done a great job doesn't have a contract, it is irresponsible as the chief executive if you don't approach that person and make sure that they're comfortable going forward. So that's why I did that with Chief White. In terms of public disagreement with Mayor Abramson, I think it's a gross mischaracterization and exaggeration for you to submit that I would be a continuation of him. I have very different life experiences. We should thank him for what he's done. I've built international business. I've created lots of jobs. I'm a very different person. One of Louisville's challenges is that we seem to compare ourselves to ourselves. And then we say, we're doing better. Well, guess what? The world's improving faster than us. So I have been critical at times of the mayor of cheering a little bit too much and not focusing so much on the results. Because what I'm interested in is comparing ourselves to the best in the world and make sure that's what our city does.
We have one more question left from the candidates to the candidates tonight. And Mr. Fisher, you have that sixth question of the candidates tonight.
Okay. I was going to go to Jackie, but Hal, you're just throwing me the love, so I'm coming back at you. Okay. Okay. 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago when we had our last get-together, always enjoyable, you and I disagreed on something as it relates to expanded gaming here in Louisville. I support expanded gaming at racetracks because it would create jobs in our city and recapture revenue to rebuild neighborhoods, pave our streets, and improve our schools instead of Kentuckians paying for the services for the people of Indiana, as all of our $500 million in gaming goes to Indiana. I know you've said you want the people to vote on the issue, but I want to know your personal belief, Hal. Should we have expanded gaming, and why or why not?
And I'll go back over for you. My answer, which is my personal belief, and that is that the people of Kentucky should vote on this issue. Our legislature, our governor, is consumed with this issue session after session, and it is distracting them from the important business of moving Kentucky forward. So the people of Kentucky need to vote, and I suggest they vote this November, but vote on this issue so we can get it decided once and for all and move on. And I will tell you there is one area that you and I did disagree, and that is specifically on the location. I said if it does, well, actually in two areas. One is that if it does pass, that the city of Louisville needs to be at the table, because in all of the past formulas, Louisville received little or no benefit. All of the money went to Frankfurt. You know how successful we've been at getting Frankfurt to reinvest in our community. So once again, we'd have $200 million going to Frankfurt, and we'd be back there begging, trying to get part of it reinvested in our community that is just dying for investment. So I'd suggest if it does pass is that, one, Louisville be at the table like every other municipality in the world, that when gaming is expanded, that some of those revenues stay right in the community. The second area we disagreed is on the location. Churchill Downs is an icon in this community. And if there's going to be a location in Louisville where this, if it does pass, it should be at Churchill Downs to continue to support them so that we know Churchill Downs is in place for the next 100 years.
All right, candidates, thank you very much. We are running ahead of schedule, and that's good. They've been on time and giving succinct answers. So as moderator, I'm going to take the liberty of firing one question of my own and give David and John one chance more to ask one other question, because I know you brought a bundle of them with you. But my question would be, because these kids out here are maybe the toughest to employ right now. We hear college kids coming out trying to get jobs, and people who've been in higher positions are coming down and taking lesser positions that they're overqualified for, and the youth are really having trouble finding jobs. We hear about, I'm going to bring business, and I'm going to do this, and with a mention of comparing ourselves to ourselves, I think a lot of people who moved to Louisville hear that story that in the 50s, this city was bigger than Nashville, Cincy, and Atlanta. What happened? How did it become so closed and not grow? Give me some succinct specifics. Is it tax cuts? Is it bonds? Is it some incentive? What are you really going to do to bring that business, the four or five people that come to town, the corporate leaders, who might have 50, 100, or 500 jobs or 1,000 jobs, what are you going to do to bring them to our city? And I'll start here with Mr. Heiner.
Thank you. Actually, you can go to halformayor.com, and there are 14 specific ideas on how we're going to turn around job attraction in this community. And if we don't turn it around, this city is in trouble. Specifically, the next mayor needs to be the chief economic development official. I've been out to visiting mayors in other cities that are just knocking it dead in job attraction. And what I see each time, and I don't see it in Louisville, is a mayor that's involved every week going through the prospect list and jumping in, actually going to the companies with other business leaders and civic leaders, trying to build connections back to their community. Louisville often makes the short list. We make it into the final four. These companies will start looking at 20 cities. And we have a great city. We'll make it in the final four, but we're almost never selected. And when we are selected, we're too slow to finally close the deal. Specifically, we have a jobs plan that's rooted in a jobs plan that was put together 14 years ago. The world has changed. It's time for a new jobs plan, and we'll go to work on that on day one. Secondly, we need a closing incentive fund. And I've proposed that it be a public-private incentive fund, that the businesses in Louisville are involved also in funding an incentive fund to close that deal, and you're seeing it in cities across the country, to make that final difference. We're also, Louisville's a leader in red tape. If you have a business here, we can slow you down forever so you even give up on the idea of expansion. And I know how to turn that around, and it'll be turned around in the first 100 days.
Mr. Fisher?
Yesterday I had a very interesting meeting with the CEO of Signature Health. They're moving their 100-some-odd jobs to Louisville in August. It's a $700 million a year company. And I met with him because he's a leader in the aging service or senior services area, which is, as I mentioned earlier, one of our great growth opportunities for our city. And I said, Joe, why did you guys decide to move here? And he said, Louisville has got a great culture. We love the Louisville originals, as I talked about earlier, our restaurants, our parks. And it has such a higher quality of life than where we're moving from, South Florida. And as his people are moving into the city, they see that they can buy more house. They have a lower cost of living. It's very attractive. I say you can actually live in Louisville as opposed to fighting traffic all day long. So that's one of our great key strengths. We've got to be a city that's easy to do business with. We are a city that is difficult for existing companies to grow. Our planning and zoning issues here are much, much too cumbersome. They take too long, and time kills deals. That needs to be turned around. Second would be, let's talk about how we can grow businesses here. I was yucky. I was lucky. I was an entrepreneur at a young age, at 23. So I would encourage you Governor Scholars, you don't have to just go down the corporate route. Think about starting your own business. You have a lot less to lose when you're young, when you start a business. Entrepreneurship's a great way to go.
All right. And Mr. Green, your thoughts about attracting business and jobs for our youth here in Louisville to keep them here.
We were told by the Greater Louisville Project's Competitive Cities Report what we need to do. Carol Coletta said, citizens must be able to conduct the business of life without car ownership. She said, cities need to distribute affordable housing. She called it economic integration, distribute affordable housing throughout the city. She said, we need to redefine regionalism and celebrate the differences within our region rather than develop our region so that it all looks the same. She also said we need to, and part of the, a subset of that was, we need to stop destroying farms and fields and invest in our existing neighborhoods. Companies will come to Louisville for many reasons. One of those is because we are strong. One of the areas that we have to work on is our health. A company's major expense is health care. Our health care is very poor. We are not in good shape, and we need to address that. That will attract businesses, along with addressing public transit issues.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Help, your question, and I guess we'll start with Mr. Fisher on this one.
Mr. Fisher, I know you feel strongly about Louisville being at a historical transactional point, but there are real first-level issues that individual folks face, like, for example, the MSD. You don't hear much about MSD in campaign rhetoric, but I'm interested in what you and the rest of the candidates think about MSD. Is it efficient and effective? Do you really like the way it's being operated? Do you think that its debt is appropriate, or is it, as some people claim, a frightening level of debt? And do you think there is now a real plan for MSD to engage those areas that have been set aside for the city of parks in the Floyd's Fork area?
Thank you. Well, I think let's start with the fact that we're under an EPA consent decree. I think everybody's familiar with that. It's some $850 million, where the EPA has told our city that we need to clean up our sewer system. It's one of the smaller consent decrees in this area. Indianapolis, Cincinnati are multi-billion dollar consent decrees. And part of the reason for that is that our MSD has gotten ahead of our regional issues, so it's a smaller total amount. The amount that we pay when our sewer bills here is relatively lower than our competitive cities as well, so we want to take a look at that in terms of our efficiency. So in that regard, we're doing okay. I'm sure that they can always do better with best management practices. They talk about that frequently at MSD when I've talked to them about this campaign. Is their debt level appropriate? Their debt level is relatively high, but they would not be receiving bonding if their debt level was inappropriate. Wall Street should be looking hard at that, and the bonds have been forthcoming. So in order to complete the projects that are required by the EPA consent decree, we are going to require some debt. I think we should note of that $850 million, 5% of that is set aside for some green infrastructure projects, and hopefully there will be as much green infrastructure as possible. And finally, on the Floyd's Fork corridor, we actually have the opportunity to improve the water quality if that project is done right out there.
Mr. Green?
Thanks, David. MSD has a recapture agreement with land developers, which in essence puts MSD in the role of a collection agency for the developers. The developers pay to put in trunk lines. This is happening out in the Floyd's Fork area and other areas. And then MSD collects fees from the citizens and sends that money back into the developer. That's not a role MSD needs to be playing. That is a role of an enabler of farm-destroying development. Floyd's Fork. This question of Floyd's Fork came up in the very first forum back in January. We were asked if we support development around Floyd's Fork. All the other candidates said yes. There were 13 of us at that point. I said, until every citizen of our region has access to Floyd's Fork, don't even develop that as a park. Secure it, buy the land, protect the land. But the child who lives 7 blocks west of that Main and Fifth office will never see Floyd's Fork because TARC doesn't go out there. Don't develop it. Buy it and secure it. That gained me a shutout at a recent debate.
And Mr. Heiner?
Concerning MSD efficiency, effectiveness, there's always room for improvement. You know, for one thing, I hope that they will be the same model of open, accountable management that I hope for Metro government, that everything be put online, all of the expenses, so it's visible 24/7 to everyone in the community. My experiences with management at MSD, I would give them high marks for managing in a very tough environment, increasing requires of purity of wastewater, which is impacting cities across the entire country, and you're seeing sewer rates skyrocketing really throughout the country right now due to the increased regulations. Seems to me they're doing a good job of managing that increase. However, there is one important area. You talked about Floyd's Fork. It is important for the future that we eliminate the sewage pumping stations and the sewage treatment plants that are discharging into Floyd's Fork. We're right now building the largest park expansion in the entire country with the 21st Century Parks Project, 4,000 acres, which will have intensive uses, all types of uses for the people of our community. It's important that those plants and pump stations go away. There's a plan. It's a regional wastewater treatment plant down at Fort Knox. We've been pushing to get it through the legislature. In fact, I testified it 2 weeks ago to try to get that done. And that's something that Metro government, working with the other cities in our region, We need to find a way to build that plant to lower costs and clean up Floyd's Fork.
All right. John David Dyke, your question?
Can I ask it to anyone I choose?
Well, we're going to let all three respond. And who did we start with last time? We started with Greg, so it'll be starting with Mr. Green.
When was the last time you rode a TARC bus? How many TARC routes can you identify by name and route number? And what is the current adult cash fare on TARC?
Well,
What's today? Let's see.
Wednesday.
Probably 3 days ago, I rode a TARC bus. I paid with a fare saver, so I don't know the fare at the box. I always go to the bank and buy either a strip of fare savers or a month pass. One of the reasons I ride that bus, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons I ride the bus is to stay a little more in tune with what's happening in our community. The buses carry all of us. The lawyers going to work in the morning, housekeepers. Our bus system has been cut twice in the past 2 years. Fares have gone up twice in the past 2 years. A company coming into Louisville, they fly in a representative to the airport. First thing she wants to do is catch a light rail, go to her first meeting downtown. There's no light rail, there's no bus. The first mental note she makes is no public transit. That's not a good way to develop jobs.
Right. Mr. Heiner?
Well, the last time I rode TARC was on the trolleys for special events. It's been a few times in the last few years. In terms of what is the rate, as a Metro employee, Metro government, thankfully, allows, just with our pass, allows us to ride TARC for free. My understanding in the last go-around, I believe the express bus that serves my district, I think, is $2.50 to get downtown in the morning. I will tell you, this is going back a few years, but in high school, back when it was the Louisville Transit Company, I relied on the bus every day to get back and forth across town for that full year. I'm fully supportive of the need for public transportation in this community and TARC's mission, and I'd also hope to find some efficiencies in TARC, especially as it relates to the suburbs, where we're running full-size buses with very few people in the bus. So my goal is... is there a way we can investigate more TARC using buses similar to TARC 3 buses in the suburbs so we can increase the number of routes? I've also been involved in business parks. The business park that I developed in Okolona with over 4,000 employees, we were able to arrange the TARC route that went down Preston to actually come through the park so people could actually get direct to their jobs. And in a previous job out in Bluegrass Industrial Park, I was instrumental in getting the distributor buses that go all throughout Bluegrass that are still in use today.
All right. And Mr. Fisher.
Last time I rode a TARC bus was in April. I was talking to the bus drivers, and they were saying, man, nobody's ever ridden a bus with us before. You don't understand how difficult it is to be a bus driver. So I said, well, let's go for a bus ride. So I picked up the bus on 3rd Street, and we went out to UPS and did the UPS route. I was curious to see, you know, how people get out to UPS, because it's a big workforce. And we circled back through the airport and came back downtown. A buck and a half, I believe, is what it cost. There's some things that we can do to improve the ridership of TARC. There's a program called 5x15 that's really going to end up being 3x15. But the concept there is for our buses, the TARC buses, to be more predictable when they're going to arrive. In order to be successful, you need to have regularity to the buses coming by. So this 5x15, 3x15 program is 5 major routes where a bus will come every 15 minutes. So you know if you go out on Bardstown Road or Dixie Highway or Preston, which is where the 3 routes are going to be, that no matter when you show up, there's going to be a bus every 15 minutes. It's that type of regularity that we need so people can depend on the buses, which right now they can't.
All right, each candidate is going to have 2 minutes for their closing statements tonight, and we've started each segment of this debate format with a different candidate, and this being the third segment. We'll start with Mr. Hal Heiner and his 2-minute closing statement tonight.
Thank you. And thank you to Bellarmine for hosting this tonight. You know, I've always worked to improve the city that I love. When it came time to write a new comprehensive plan for our community 20 years ago, I volunteered and was one of about 200 people that showed up
for study groups. A few years into the process, the effort came down to 12 people who wrote the goals and objectives, and I was one of that final group because I care about our city. I served 2 years on our Chamber of Commerce Executive Committee as the volunteer vice chair of community planning because I care about our city. And in January 2002, I got so excited about the possibilities of merger, one city united behind a common vision, that I ran for Metro Council. I went door to door every night after work and all day Saturday from February through November because I care about our city. And I've served in perhaps more leadership positions on this Metro Council than anyone. I've chaired the Budget Committee, Public Works and Transportation, Jobs and Economic Development, and Public Safety in different years. I know our city. I've been fighting for 7 years to rein in spending and try to urge this government in the direction that it needs to go for prosperity for all our citizens. Some people want to politicize my time on Metro Council. I call it experience. And right now, that is what Louisville needs. In these difficult times, Louisville can't afford on-the-job training. I am ready to lead day one. To bring about the major changes needed to make our city more vibrant, to move ahead at a faster pace, to be competitive for the best jobs and opportunities, I need your help. Please join our campaign at halformayor.com, and I hope to have your support and vote on November 2nd. Thank you.
Now 2 minutes for Mr. Fisher.
Well, thanks to Bellarmine University, the Governor Scholar Program. Thank you, Aris, for your great leadership with the program. Thanks to my wife, Alex, who is on the board of directors of the Governor Scholars. So this race is about many things: rebuilding our neighborhoods, making our city safe and secure, improving our parks, and building bridges, both literally and figuratively. However, more than anything, this race is about jobs, about putting Louisville back to work. From PRP to Prospect, from Russell to Fern Creek, I meet people daily who are out of work, people who are worried about how to provide for their families, how to pay the rent, how to pay the mortgage, and how to put food on the table. The voters of Louisville have a choice in November. I'm the proven job creator. It's what I've done my entire life, and it's what I will do as your next mayor. I'm also the one candidate who can bring our community together. South, East, West, business, labor, developers, environmentalists, to work together, to avoid the extremes and focus on what we have in common and build a great international city around that. Our best days here in Louisville are ahead of us, but this city needs a leader of the future, someone who has fresh ideas and who will invigorate our already great city for all the possibilities that are in front of us. We need a leader that understands Louisville is competing not only with Chicago and Charlotte, but Shanghai and Bangalore, a person who will insist and work alongside each and every one of you for the highest standards in public safety, educational attainment, public health, and teamwork, a job creator, a person that will help put Louisville back to work. I believe I'm that person, and I humbly ask for your support on November the 2nd. Thank you.
And we conclude tonight with a closing statement of Mr. Green. 2 minutes.
I am Jackie Green, independent mayoral candidate, neither Democrat nor Republican. In November, Louisville voters will do more than just vote for a mayor. In November, voters will participate in a referendum on the direction and the future of Louisville. In November, voters will choose either unsustainable, farm-destroying development that diminishes private investment, public infrastructure, and metro services for existing neighborhoods, or voters will choose to strengthen existing neighborhoods, reclaim abandoned commercial and industrial sites, and revive blighted neighborhoods. In November, voters will choose either the old business as usual, energy greedy, energy dependent local economy, or voters will choose a new energy lean, energy independent local economy that can meet the challenges of the future. In November, voters will choose either some unknown variation on the Ohio River Bridges project, or voters will choose a world-class public transit system serving our increasingly walkable communities. In November, it is the big picture that counts. Vision and direction. The old political machines and the old visions will not meet the new challenges. I'm Jackie Green, independent mayoral candidate, neither Democrat nor Republican. Thank you.
Well, thanks again, candidates, for staying on time. I've never done a debate where it's been so good, almost down to the second, and sometimes a little short if you felt the need, and there's nothing wrong with that as well if you've answered the question the way you thought it needed to be answered. Let's give a round of applause to all three here for spending the night with us. And also the representatives of the Governor's Scholars Program, great job with the questions, and thank you for being here. And to our other panelists tonight, David Hopp and John David Dyke, thank you for great questions here tonight. Appreciate it. Glad we got a couple extra ones in. And thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor to be here this evening. Bellarmine University, what a great place. It's maybe a lot of people around the country haven't heard about it, but they should, because not only do great young men and women come here, but more importantly, as you meet them throughout this community, great young men and women leave here, and that's a real testament to what they do here at Bellarmine University. Thanks again for having the debate tonight, and thank you. Have a great night.